Hello, you all. I am having a sense of gratitude right now. There's just some good slash exciting things. And I don't, as you know, I'm pretty private on this podcast. And, here's the thing about privacy. So, this is my advice to you. I don't know if a single one of y'all want to listen to any of my advice, which is sad and pathetic because I have some good advice. Anyway, so here's my advice to you. People like to act as though they're entitled to know your autobiography. And I don't know if part of that has to do with how much the internet is a part of our lives. Our phones are like a limb on our body, and we can easily Google shit. And sometimes, and that's kind of the point. Like, you can get by with just a first name sometimes, and the name doesn't even have to be popular. Sometimes you could have the tiniest little itty itty bitty crumb of information about someone. And it could open a door to a world of information. And so you have to be extra careful. I love to be paranoid when it comes to my privacy. And like I said, this is my advice to you. Everybody should be private if possible. The reason being, I think that you never regret being private. There are a lot of things you could do in this world, a lot of decisions you can make. But show me the one person who regrets being private and therefore keeping their peace. Show me that person. That person doesn't exist. So back when I had a successful website, everybody I knew felt entitled to know what the website was. They claimed that they wanted to visit it and they wanted to support it. I had some friends who did visit the website every day. However, the vast majority of the people I knew, 99% of the people I knew, I refused to tell them what the website was. I felt that it would be a distraction because when you basically show people what you're doing or what you're working on, you're opening yourself up to feedback. And thinking about opening yourself up to feedback means that it could really harm and hinder and delay and make you second guess your decisions. It could really harm the work that you're doing. And you need to work on your focus should be on production and quality, not thinking about what somebody else is going to think or say. So I kept my website private. And then when my website stopped doing well, all thanks to Google becoming a public company and wanting to really satisfy its shareholders and doing all kinds of really ridiculous algorithm changes, I stopped getting, all of the traffic that I would get. Me and everyone else who had a website. And so it was a very hard time in my life. And I cannot fathom if everybody I knew was able to watch and witness that downfall. So, what saved my pride, my self-esteem, my sanity, my peace was the fact that I had laid the groundwork, not knowing what my fate would be with my website, but I laid the foundation, excuse me, to keep my shit private. And again, I didn't think things were gonna go south. It was like a steady incline progressively. So like just progressively month after month after month after month, just outperforming in spades the previous month. And so I didn't see it coming. There was no way for me to see it coming, me and every other website owner at the time. So the fact that I was able to struggle in private, that was huge. Because the reality is, you just don't know who's on your side and who's on your team sometimes. You really don't know. There are so many fake people out there. Like the other month, I cut a friend who I distanced myself from her a long time ago, years ago, a significant amount of time. I'd say, I don't know, 7-some-odd years ago, if not more. And then every like Christmas, like the holiday, she was always texting me. And so finally I was like, do you want to talk? Because I just felt bad for her. So I started talking to her and we started talking since the pandemic, I think. Yeah, absolutely. Since the pandemic. So we started talking and then we've been talking for years, obviously. Talking again. And then I cut her the other month. And I don't believe, like, I have very firm beliefs and like people cut people out of their lives way too frivolously and heartlessly. And I'm will never support it. I will never endorse it. However, this particular friend had such a strong, like she was such a strong streak of jealousy that ran throughout her fucking body. Like jealous to the point where it's like somebody needs to make medication for people like her, like therapy medication, like fucking ayahuasca trips, like fucking borderline lobotomy shit, like so jealous. And you know, it's like I just thought, like, how the hell is this person supposed to be my friend if I'm doing well? How will she survive, like, if I'm thriving, because she herself is doing the opposite of thriving, and she's been that way. She's lazy. So anyways, it was like, okay, well, and I always just knew, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to cut her. I'm definitely going to have to cut her before I achieve some of the things that I want to achieve, because she's not going to be able to handle it. But I kept her as a friend because I was like, okay, well, if she shows me that she's not who I believe she is and not who she's shown me she is, kind of like that Maya Angelou quote, I'll keep her around. But it's like the jealousy, it was like, it was too much. And there's more to it. But my point is, like, she always wanted to be all up in my business. And I was private with her, even though we would text daily and shit like that. Like, privacy, I'm telling y'all, you will never, ever in your life regret being private. Because when you're private, you never have to wonder. I'm someone who really likes to eliminate certain possibilities. I want the probability of certain things happening to be zero. And when people don't know your business, good luck. You know, good luck to them finding it out. So I just encourage people to be private. Don't be posting everything on your social media and having your shit public and just putting all your business out there. Don't be ranting and raving on social media when you're upset. Have your healthy outlets, have your support system. Go ahead. Like, people will try to guilt you for being private. Go ahead and let them try to guilt you. Let them know that it's not working. Because I let people know, I'm like, with time, you'll know everything, but I'm not going to just offer everything up, all my information up to you, just right off the bat. Absolutely not. So that's my advice. I'm laughing because I'm acting like I'm like saying something really mind-blowing and deep and insightful, but it's basic advice that isn't given. There really isn't enough public discourse about the value of privacy. And I'm not talking about just social media and shit. I'm talking about the people that you meet in your day-to-day life and lives. Those are the people that you need to be private with. A lot of people are unwell. A lot of people. And I know we're all about self-care and therapy speak and boundaries. That has shit to do with the people who are unwell and they don't want to have anything to do with acting properly. Once you let those people into your orbit and you give those people too much access to you, you're fucked. Like, privacy is a door that you cannot close. I can't remember who. I feel like it was Tina Fey. I can't remember who said it, but the point is, different celebrities, I've heard at least one celebrity say that once you let people into your private and personal life, you always have to let them in. You can never shut that door. So think about that. You don't got to be famous to have that same belief that knowing that once you offer up your business to people, they are not going to let you back away. They are not going to be like, oh, yeah, you want to be private about that now? It's not going to work. So you have to be very precise and put a lot of thought into who you share your business with because random ass strangers will ask very personal questions just on a whim. And when you're feeling really comfortable, and if you're not really sober at the time, you could be divulging things that are going to come back to haunt your ass. Especially because a lot of times people are asking questions just to judge you and to take whatever information that you give them and use it against you. So be careful out there, folks. Be careful. All right, now it is time. There is no transition. Now it is time to get into Love is Blind UK Season 1, Episode 2. Boop, boop, boop. So, I am someone who does like 80,000 things a day. Forgive me. I'm going off of my notes. This is the first time in my 4-year podcast history that I am not watching episodes twice before doing a recap. I am watching them once, doing my little notes, trying to catch some YouTubes of people weighing in and giving y'all recaps and slash reviews, at least for episode 1 and now episode 2. I don't know. I don't really see that changing for now. I'm so like pressed for time and I cannot believe it, but I heard that Netflix is dropping five episodes on us on August 14th. Why the hell aren't they spacing out the UK season? Because haven't y'all noticed that Netflix, first and foremost, like episodes for any hit show, they're longer. When these shits first premiere, I swear these shits are around 44 to 52 minutes. But then they be doing this shit like 1 hour and 3 minutes. Fuck y'all. We got shit to do. So it's like they're about to drop five fucking episodes on us. And guess what? I'm going on vacation next week. So they're dropping the episodes. I think. Yeah. They're dropping the episodes the night before I leave for vacation. So obviously, I will see what I can do before I go on vacation, but if not, I will be recapping the five episodes that they are dropping on us on the same day when I return. It's not a long trip at all. My vacation is like one of the shortest trips I've ever taken. It's less than a week. I actually booked my hotel yesterday. Here's what I gotta say to y'all. Shout the fuck out to Afterpay, Klarna, Sizzle, Zippay. Excuse me, I heard PayPal does that shit. Shout the fuck out to these companies who are allowing you to split your payments in 4, 6, 8, 12, whatever it is. Shout out. They've changed lives. And I'm just blown away. So I booked my hotel on booking.com. And booking.com, like, I'm name dropping these companies because guess what? As this podcast grows, my ghetto ass will be approaching these companies. Like, where my discount at? Anyway, so like, I'm at the highest level of discount options or membership, members, whatever, on booking.com. Because I'm a booking.com stan. I've been using booking.com exclusively to book my shit. So I'm at genius level 3. Sorry, I don't want to pull it up. I don't think they have a genius level 4. You know, I said I don't want to pull it up and now my ass is like, let me go see. Let me pull it up. I'm at the highest level of genius level discount, bitch. Like, because I stay booking my shit on booking.com. Yeah, bitch. I'm at the highest level of a genius level discount, bitch. Genius level 3. So anyway, my point is I've been using booking.com to book my hotels forever. And all of a sudden, because I was going to book my hotel earlier and I booked one and then I let it cancel, whatever. Anyway, so my point is, whatchamacallit, all of a sudden last night they allowed split payment. Again, I've been rocking with this site for so long. I was on it days prior and they didn't show me this motherfucking option. And last night they're showing, I was like, OMG. So then I was able to book a dope ass hotel, bitch. And let me see here. Yeah, I was able to book a dope ass hotel and fucking, sorry, my mind is wandering. Because I was able to split up the payments. And if you're thinking like, oh my God, she's a broke bitch. The amount of shit that I got on the docket for things that I got to pay for, like, you would understand why my ass is, why I benefited from being able to split my shit. Because first of all, this vacation is a last minute trip. First and foremost. Second of all, I have more trips to be taking, etc., etc. So, that's so interesting. March, April, May, June, July, August. I wonder what happened. I disputed a charge for a hotel. That's kind of why I was like, oh, my mind is wandering. I disputed a charge with my credit union. And I need to see what happened. Because I stayed at a hotel where I canceled a reservation. And it was in March. And I'm like, I filed a dispute in motherfucking March. And I'm just wondering what happened to that dispute. Okay, I have got to reach out. I've got to reach out to the credit union because I don't want them, you know, to go ahead and charge me while I'm on my trip. If they decided to rule in the hotel's favor. Which clearly I feel like they didn't. Because they don't take, disputes take up to like 90 days. So why the hell did I file in March? And it's like, yeah, they must have already taken the money out. Anyways, let's get to Love is Blind already. Shit. It's the first time I'm giving such a long ass intro. I'm feeling proud of myself. I just dive into these episodes these days. All right, so at the very top of my notes, I have, it says, Tom has abandonment issues because his dad left when he was 12. How his dad left is so gross. I would love, like, I think people who abandon their kids like this, Like the family went on vacation, he came back, dad gone, nowhere to be found. Boom, bam, past tense. Like, what is going on in your brain to make you behave this way? Like, why is it that you cannot reduce your role as a parent? Maybe you don't live with your kid anymore, but you still see them, or you still reach out to them, or you still pay them money. You still have a relationship with them. Like, why is it that you gotta go from being in the home, being physically present, to being a ghost? I would love to know. I would love to know how these people are able to make that leap. I want to know, is there, like, what's going on in their brain? Is there, what is going on upstairs for them to behave this way? I feel like because it's a certain type of person who could do this. So I would love for scientists to figure that shit out because I want those people to stay far away from me. Like, if there are certain indicators that somebody is shady in that way or capable of that, I don't want them in my orbit at all. I'm just talking about friendship wise. I'm not talking about relationship wise, just I don't want them near me. Like, it's odd to me. It's very, I don't understand it. So moving along, Freddie said that he met a psychic who told him that he'll meet a woman whose name starts with the letter C. To me, that means the psychic said that he would marry a woman whose name started with a C, but I don't think he went that far. But that is cute. I mean, some of these psychics know what the hell they're talking about. I remember when I was in college, a friend of mine was close friends with this older psychic. She was like 60. Excuse me, she was like 60 or so. I went to this psychic. This psychic told me that I'm going to be in a really good relationship in 9 months. Tell me why one day it hit me that 9 months to the day that I had met that psychic, I was in a relationship. Like, some of these people know what the fuck they're talking about. Like, I cannot discredit a psychic. Anyways, so then Catherine talks about how hard it's been for being adopted. And she said that she is going to pick Sam instead of Ollie. She claims it's because I think she's friends with Demi, which, you know, she's a liar. So, Catherine, before she says that she's going to pick Sam, she is offended that Ollie says that Club Cirque is pretentious. And Ollie talks about what kind of girls go to Club Cirque. I think I already said this in episode one. How the fuck you gonna judge somebody for going to a club that you go to? Like, Catherine said she was there for a birthday. It sounds like Ollie is posted up in that club every single weekend. Like, why are you talking about the people that go there when you go there yourself? Ollie's very annoying to me. And Ollie tells Catherine that they should keep seeing other people. So, Ollie, is it Catherine? That's what I have here, but I feel like he. It must have been Catherine, if I have it in my notes. I feel like he told that to Demi. But anyway, so he said that they should see other people. And I think that's also what, like, helped Catherine choose Sam, is I think she just felt like, okay, Ollie isn't feeling her as much as she wants him to. Ollie, here's my issue with Ollie. Like, Ollie looks like he's a good 6'4", 6'3", 6'3", at least. So he's light skin. He's 6'3". He doesn't do it for me. I would take him down. I would hook up. But relationship wise, he doesn't do it for me. As far as like looks wise. But I understand that his aesthetic is what a lot of other women are into. And I just don't believe that I don't believe that this show is for him, because I feel that he probably, like, men who look like Ollie, they tend to kind of want a stereotypical beauty. Like, what stereotypes, you know, stereotypically is considered beautiful. And I don't believe that this is the right show for someone like him. I think he needs to be up in Cirque talking about pretentious women that he takes home that night, you know. But at the same time, it's such an individual thing, because I could look at Freddie, who could easily model, is such a pretty boy with like a really good body. And he seems to want to settle down. So it's not just about somebody being hot and sexy and stereotypically hot, but it's about their mental. And I just don't believe that Ollie, he belongs on a show like this. I believe that he belongs on a show where he could see what the women look like, because I just don't believe that he's someone who, like, I have a hard time believing that he is not superficial or doesn't like women who look a certain way. Because of his height alone, he's able to pull a lot of bitches. I can say that right now. And we all know that. I'm not saying anything new. Like, tall men, it's easier for them when it comes to dating. So I just don't believe that Ollie is right for the show. Next, we got Sabrina and Steve meeting each other. They're into each other. And so I have my notes. Why are the men so tall? Like, I don't believe that these women are 5 feet tall. I believe, like, these men are all like 6'4", 6'3" to 6'5". So, I mean, if y'all are gonna cast tall men in the UK, I mean, Bobby ain't tall. But if y'all are gonna be casting tall ass men in the UK, you better keep that same energy and do that shit for us here in the States. So then Jasmine tells Sam that she thinks that he isn't genuine. Sam gets really upset. This is what happens when someone who is trying to and who thinks they're crushing it, right, at presenting themselves a certain way, when you clock them and you're like, I don't think it's real, they flip out. He didn't flip out because she was lying. He flipped out because she clocked him. And now he felt like, oh shit, I might go home. I want these cameras in my face. So, Jasmine, I can't believe I have that. So, Jasmine dumps Sam, and Sam says, maybe I'm just supposed to be alone forever, like a child. That's what he says. That's not what you say when somebody dumps you, because guess what? They don't give a shit. They don't really give a shit if you're gonna be alone forever, if you're supposed to be alone forever. So when Jasmine says that she thinks he's saying everything that she wants to hear and lets him know, like, it's a no for her dog, Sam storms out the room. He throws down his wine glass. That's a person loves wine history. And Sam goes to the men's quarters. He says, that was the worst experience of my life. Oh my God, he's so exhausting. And Sam says, this is good because now I have clarity. Now I know that Nicole is the one I want to marry. Sam says he's going to invest into Nicole, and his emotional IQ is at a negative 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, this man forgot the cameras were rolling. Because he looks so stupid. He looks like such a clown. He forgot that this is being filmed. Or maybe he hoped it wouldn't make, the show. They would get cut. Like, he's so dumb. Like, and here's the thing. Like, he was all in on Jasmine. Now he's claiming to be all in on Nicole. Because he wants to be on the show. And he felt threatened. He was pissed because he was like, damn it. I don't want to go home. Let me go for Nicole. So it's Ollie's birthday, and to me, it makes him a handmade card. It looked like she spent time on that shit. It was beautiful, all colored, multi-pages. Like, I think she has a little bit of artistic ability. It's just, I wish they showed us more of the card. And then she had his pod filled with balloons, and Nicole asks, and he appreciated it. To me, it was really smart. Like, this is how you stand out on this show. When it is a man's birthday, or females, but we've seen the women do it. When it's someone's birthday, go ahead and get the people on set to put whatever you want in that person's pod. Make a cake, make a card. Do what your competition ain't doing. It didn't work for Bliss initially, but it did in the end, and it clearly has worked for Demi, because I think the card is what made Ollie say he wanted to choose her. It's obvious when you watch the show that it warmed his heart so very much. It was a turning point. So then Nicole asks Benaiah if he sees himself proposing, and he says not yet. Bobby proposes to Jasmine with a poem. The poem was great. When Nicole tells Sam that he may not be able to pick her up very easily, he is stunned. He's aghast. He practically gasps and his heart starts beating fast. And he is concerned and he questions her on it. Like, why would she say that? And then he goes back to the men's lounge and he tells the other men that maybe Nicole is overweight. He says, quote, "Is she implying something?" And the men are so cute. Like, the support on the UK series is so heartwarming. I'm like, we really are trash here in America. We don't be supporting people like this. Like, they do. These are your competitors, and everybody is happy for everybody. We ain't got no shady, cutthroat, backstabbing shit. Anyways, so someone says to Sam, "No, maybe she just sprained her ankle." And Sam says, "I like a little meat," but it's like, okay, Sam does not like a thick woman. Like, he does not like a thick woman. He likes his nose job. He wants to, quote, "pick a bitch up," which already is letting us know that you better be small. So Anaya overhears what Sam was saying about Nicole. So he tells Nicole that Sam is not there for the right reasons. And that he wants to be, but that him, Benaiah, wants to be with, he, Benaiah, wants to be with Nicole. So Benaiah struggled so much to throw Sam under the bus. And it was really endearing. Like, Benaiah has a really good heart. Whoever ends up with Benaiah, I don't see this man cheating. Like, I really did love that asshole on the season with Uche, Chris. Remember, Chris was with that girl with the long face. And then we found out, like, Chris dumped his gr allegedly dumped his girlfriend before the show, got back with a bitch after the show, or got a new bitch. Like, he played us. I was like, Chris is the best guy in Love is Blind history, but he was a liar. But Nye doesn't do it for me physically, sexually, but his heart is pure gold. And it's like, if there's a woman who can get past the fact that he is broke and homeless, then. And I do think he would be a good partner. Anyways, so I just love that Benaiah was so, like, conflicted, like, felt so bad about outing Sam. Like, you really owe nobody nothing on these shows. These are strangers. And I love that he cared about, Nicole's happiness enough to try to tell her. So that is where episode two ended as far as I know, as far as my notes and my memory serving me correctly. It ended with Benaiah telling Nicole that Sam ain't shit. But, we always see on these shows when people try to warn somebody, if for whatever reason, it's like they want to prove whoever warned them wrong. And sometimes it, like, draws them closer to that person. Alrighty, y'all, that is episode two. Hope you're enjoying your day. I will try to get to episode three and four over the next few days. Talk to you soon.